Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Again, if you still have updates of anything going on, the power is back where you are. Maybe you're still without power this morning. We'll take those texts at 3930.
And we're seeing a little bit of both. Joe, a texter just said power just came back on in Elma, which is good news. And the power, however, is still out in the Lancaster area near William and Lake Streets. So please feel free to update us as we go along, and we'll get the word out to everybody. And as Greg called in earlier, Joe, Greg from Greg's Tree Service, if you're out and about and you're working, trying to restore power or clear trees, let us know what's happening. We're happy to talk to you on the air as well.
Yes, and as Alan said, as we keep on saying, you go to an intersection and the lights are out, it's a four-way stop. I am amazed. I am one of the worst drivers in the world, and I know that. So I think everyone should just drive with caution this morning as crews are out there trying to clean up. And you'd rather be late than sorry. I always say that.
And you don't want to pick up a line because it could be energized. So even if you think it's harmless, don't take a chance. Another text just came in, Joe. Power back on at Transit Road between Clinton and William Street in Lancaster. So thanks for those updates, folks. Keep them coming.
That's right. But now we will go to Washington, D.C. and speak to Buffalo's own Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning. The weather here in D.C. is sunny and calm, but the politics sure aren't, Joe.
That's yeah. Now, are you getting any of those negative winds from Baltimore this morning?
Yeah, we had a heck of a windstorm overnight. Woke us all up, and I suspect a lot of other people, too, but nothing of the sort that you're getting in Buffalo. All of our trees seem to be fully intact and standing, and power lines are upright, and not a whole lot of badness going on.
So. Well, that's good. Now, Dave, let's talk about a place where there's a lot of love, peace, and everyone is singing kumbaya. I'm talking about the Senate, of course, who will get the articles of impeachment this week?
We think so. And of course, everyone who asked me a question about this is saying, well, this is like a trial, right? This is a legal process. And I have to remind them all the time that, no, impeachment by design and by its nature is a political process. And what we've been seeing with, for example, Nancy Pelosi withholding the articles of impeachment, not sending them to the Senate, is part and parcel of that political process. There is brinksmanship, gamesmanship here. And although we do think that this week is going to be the week that ultimately those articles, two articles of impeachment, are transferred to the Senate, there still could be some drama left on that front. And we don't know exactly when to a day or even to a week when that's going to happen, although Nancy Pelosi indicated this morning that it would be imminent and that we are getting close.
Yeah, she was on This Week this morning, and later on that show, they had the powerhouse. Some in her party are thinking that her holding the articles are a failed strategy. Are those becoming more and more members, or just a select few?
A select few, and ultimately, it's not going to probably matter all that much. We know how the story almost certainly is going to end, and the story is going to end with Donald Trump being acquitted. He's not going to lose the presidency as a result of this impeachment trial, and that's simply because it takes two-thirds of the U.S. Senate to remove a sitting president from office during an impeachment proceeding. And Republicans control the Senate. There seem to be effectively no Republicans, save for maybe one or two, who are going to cross the aisle and vote with Democrats. So barring something completely unforeseen and completely monumental, there's nothing that's going to get Donald Trump out of office during this impeachment trial. The only thing that is going to get Donald Trump out of office is the action at the ballot box in November, and we got a long way to go there.
Dave, you took the next question right out of my mouth. Now, yes, it doesn't look like a two-thirds majority is going to happen. But just for those of us interested, who are the Republican senators we want to keep an eye on during the Senate trial?
Two in particular. Keep an eye on Lisa Murkowski, senator from Alaska, and on the opposite end of the country in Maine, Senator Susan Collins, both who've been, who have a very strong independent streak, who have been labeled as moderates, although that may be a bit of a misnomer. But the two of them could be interesting to watch, and they've been clamoring for, to paraphrase them, both a fair trial, and have been kind of sending signals and telegraphing their position that they don't just want to see this be a wash, something that's just going to be up and down, without debate, without witnesses, a proceeding that effectively would just be a rubber stamp for what Donald Trump wants, which is for this to end with him getting acquitted, which, again, we suspect is going to happen.
Dave, in addition to Collins and Murkowski, how significant is Mitt Romney in this mix of Republicans who are pushing back?
Yeah, you could add him, too. You know, Mitt Romney is, and Donald Trump have long had a very tortured relationship. There have been plenty of flashpoints over the past many years, going back to long before Donald Trump was a presidential candidate or president, and Mitt Romney was the Republican nominee. So the two of them, there's not a whole lot of love lost there. And Mitt Romney, I suppose you could put it also in the camp of senators who may be willing to go and vote for Donald Trump, either on one or both of the articles of impeachment, to convict him of one or two of those articles. So at most, I mean, we are only looking at probably one, two, at the maximum three Republican senators who would cross the aisle and vote with Democrats. But that would still be many, many senators short of getting to that magic two-thirds threshold, which you're going to need to get Donald Trump or any president out of office. And we saw that 20-plus years ago with Bill Clinton, that you needed that kind of supermajority in order for that to happen.
Dave, back to the to Nancy Pelosi on this week, this morning, George Stephanopoulos did ask her about the possibility of Congress introducing more articles of impeachment. Is that something that's been discussed in Washington, or is that a very unlikely thing to happen?
Well, it has been discussed, Joe, and it has been discussed ever since Donald Trump was inaugurated. The notion of impeaching him on a variety of things that go beyond the two articles that got sent forward, which is obstruction of Congress and effectively abuse of power related to Donald Trump's actions vis-a-vis the Ukraine, in any regard, it's a situation where you've had Democrats and Donald Trump detractors saying that, hey, you could have articles of impeachment about his business dealings. You could have articles of impeachment about obstruction of justice. So there are, and that goes back to the Mueller investigation, which we used to talk about pretty much every hour on the hour, and has become almost history now. But the notion of a second round of articles of impeachment right in the teeth of a presidential election, when there's going to be a vote coming in less than a year, seems to be remote at this point. It's nice to play parlor games like that and fun for political scientists and junkies and whatnot. But I don't think anyone, at least at this point, is taking that too seriously, where if Donald Trump is acquitted on these two articles, that the Democrats in the House would come back with another volley of articles of impeachment. It just doesn't seem to be too much of a possibility at this point.
Dave, you know D.C. better than anyone I know. Say the president is reelected, okay, and he didn't get, obviously, kicked out of office by Senate. I know what you said about possibility of more being introduced now, but do you see Congress going on the impeachment route during a second term, or just you personally, do you think that would be unlikely?
Hey, anything is possible, and a lot could happen between now and then, too. Who knows what Donald Trump is going to do, what Donald Trump is going to say. The two articles of impeachment that are going forward, those are pretty much related to something that happened last year, not something that happened in 2017 or 2018. So it would be really up to two camps. Number one, Donald Trump himself, and number two, House Democrats. And that's assuming that House Democrats are going to hold on to power in the House, which seems like a likely outcome, but not a definite outcome. We've got an election to run. So predicting what's going to happen as it applies to impeachment in 2021 when Donald Trump may or may not be president then by virtue of the ballot box is something that that is far, far in the future. And we've got a lot to go between now and then. But, you know, anything could happen. It would be unprecedented in U.S. history for a president to be impeached twice. But we're getting into some pretty rarefied or unique territory in politics in the United States anyway. So who the heck knows what would happen in that regard?
Obviously, Dave, tensions are escalating with Iran after the killing of Soleimani, and then this horrible mistake that Iran is apparently taking blame for in shooting down the plane. What sort of feeling are you hearing now, or what's the sense in Washington about these escalating tensions, especially in light of the plane being shot down?
Yeah, well, just looking at the air disaster in and of itself, the United States, with an air disaster such as this, whether it was the cause that we now know is related to a military action, a missile being shot off, whether it was weather, whether it was technical failure or whatnot, the U.S. Typically is involved in some way. That obviously is not going to be the case given the tensions between Iran and the United States at this point. And Canadian officials, of course, are apoplectic about this because there were dozens of Canadians who were on that plane who are now dead as a result of Iran shooting a missile and taking this plane down. So there are questions right now as to whether the crash site was tampered with, whether there is truly going to be a thorough investigation. There are many international calls at this point for Iran to be held to account and for Iran to bring to account internally the people who are responsible for this. So it's a very fluid situation, number one. It's a very tragic situation, of course, number two. And it's something that is kind of a very difficult geopolitical situation, just given the number of different countries and entities, and obviously the tensions between the United States and Iran that are at play here. Say nothing about Ukraine, which the plane was a Ukraine jet and had many citizens from that nation on it as well.
Dave, on Friday, President Trump told Fox News that it would have been four embassies that were targeted. And that's really one of the reasons he decided to take out Soleimani. And then the Congress is saying that they were not briefed on that. There was no mention of four embassies in the classified briefing that they received on Wednesday. And I know that his defense secretary, Mark Esper, is, you know, making the rounds on the Sunday talk shows and talking about this and saying that that is the truth. Have you heard anything about this, specifically the four embassies targeted?
Yeah, this has been coming out, too. But there have been some mixed signals coming from the White House and the Trump administration in general. You mentioned what Donald Trump said, what Mark Esper said. Mike Pompeo has been making comments, too, that he indicated that this could be in retaliation to a U.S. contractor being killed by Iranian strikes. So what is the truth here? Well, that will probably not be known for a while yet, but the fact of the matter is the deed has been done. General Soleimani has been killed. Iran has retaliated, and we're sort of at this very, very, very tense detente at this point where very few people here in Washington right now, anyone that I've talked to, expects that there's going to be some sort of imminent shooting war type of retaliation by either side. But that being said, too, a lot of folks do suspect that we haven't heard the last from Iran from a military or a terrorism standpoint, or Iran works through a whole bunch of different types of organizations that are affiliated with the Iranian government, different types of military and paramilitary groups. And they have long caused a great amount of trouble all throughout the Mideast, so that could be another venue for Iran to continue to press this conflict. But at the same time, too, U.S. sanctions hitting Iran have been disastrous for this country for on an economic standpoint. And, you know, just the price of staples and the basics of life in Iran are getting so exorbitant at this point that people in Iran are very, very scared about their livelihood, too. So this, too, is a very fluid situation and one that everyone in the United States, it would behoove them to monitor very, very closely.
No doubt about it. It seems to be changing certainly by the day, if not the hour. But in our earlier conversation, we were talking about the senators who may oppose President Trump. We mentioned Murkowski, Collins. I mentioned Romney. And Senator Mike Lee of Utah voiced some criticism of the president, saying he didn't hear anything specifically about the four embassies, and several of his colleagues did not, according to what Lee told CNN. Do you think that will continue to grow, or how do you think the White House will manage this, that the president specifically mentioned those four?
Well, different from impeachment, where most Republican senators are going to vote in lockstep and are very unified and solidified, it's a little bit different when it comes to war powers. And if you read your Constitution, if you look to the initial articles of the Constitution, that spells out that Congress has a pretty significant role when it comes to the United States taking military action and having a balance of powers here in regards to that. So the notion that Congress would be cut out of the process or be relegated to sort of tertiary status when it comes to action being taken, military action taken against a foreign power, that makes some senators angry. And that is something that makes Democrats angry, yes, to some degree, but also some Republicans, too, particularly ones who are on the hawkish side, number one, but also, too, who believe that Congress absolutely has a constitutional role here. So I'm not surprised that at least a couple of senators, one like Mike Lee, who definitely fits that bill, would speak out about that. And Donald Trump has never really been too terribly interested in involving Congress any more than he has to when it regards things that he wants to go get done and do. He may criticize them a lot, but not necessarily is he treating them, for better or for worse, as an equal in the U.S. balance of powers and the different branches of government.
You know, Dave, it's always interesting to speculate about what might happen. And when you talk hawkish, I think of Mike Pompeo and his role of increasing support in a Republican establishment that wants the U.S. to adopt more aggressive policies towards Iran and towards Tehran specifically. Do you think that this might be a way for Pompeo to set himself up for his own presidential run, perhaps in 2024?
And we've had some polls come out about 2024, and we're talking 2024. I think we probably have more than a few listeners right now ready to bang their head against a wall that here we are with many months left before the election talking about 2024. But at least as it applies to Mike Pompeo, to your question, he had an opportunity to leave the Trump administration and run for the U.S. Senate this year. Could have done so back in Kansas. He decided against that. So for the foreseeable future, he's going to remain in his role where he has a great deal of power and he has won Donald Trump's trust to a degree that most people within the Trump administration have not enjoyed, either those who are currently there or those who have come and who have gone. So he's in a significant position of power as it is, whether he has future political ambitions in 2024. Well, you know, that one would have to presuppose a lot of things happening now for that to be the case. Of course, there's Vice President Mike Pence and plenty of other Republicans who would likely want to vie in 2024 for the presidency on the Republican side. Donald Trump would, regardless of whether he gets reelected or loses in November, there will be another Republican running in 2024. So put Mike Pompeo and probably about 25-30 others who conceivably could run 4+ years from now.
Dave, you know, the president's Twitter, always a point of discussion. Yesterday, he tweeted directly to the Iranian people. How is that being taken and received in Washington, D.C.?
But it was definitely, I think it caused everyone to, especially us reporter types, to look at their phone. I don't recall Donald Trump tweeting in Farsi before, so I get, I might be masochistic in doing so, but get push tweets to my phone every time Donald Trump tweets. My phone buzzes and beeps. And
so what is your wallpaper just Twitter alerts from the president?
Pretty much. But yeah, I mean, this one definitely stopped me in my tracks for a few seconds. And it was very clear that he was speaking directly to the Iranian people in a way that he hadn't before, using the medium of his choice, which is Twitter. Now, how many people in Iran are actually looking at their phone waiting for Donald Trump tweets? Probably not too many, but you can very much expect that that particular Donald Trump tweet has made the rounds all throughout this nation of 80 million people who have very, very strong feelings about the United States, about Donald Trump, and about their own politicians and a political firmament, too, with plenty of protests going on right now, Joe, that are very anti-government and pick up on the protests in past months and past years in Iran, which in some cases have resulted in people being injured, jailed, and even killed as a result of doing so. Iran is not a free country where protest is welcome.
And Dave, one more thing. As you know, Friday, former Congressman Chris Collins gets sentenced. Any speculation in Washington, D.C. of how much time he may get?
It seems that jail time will be in his future. He could get up to almost 5 years, if I recall correctly, although there have been suggestions that it'll be around a year. He could conceivably get less than that, but it's not going to be something where Chris Collins is going to go away for the rest of his life. There are sentencing structures for the type of situation that he's in right now, so this will likely be measured in months or a few years as opposed to anything else.
Well, Dave, as always, we thank you for joining us, and Brian and Susan will talk to you on Tuesday.
I will look forward to it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you,
always
Dave.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dave. Joe, it's great to talk to Dave. He's so knowledgeable about every facet of politics, and you can tell he eats, drinks, lives, sleeps it every day.
And if we didn't have a clock that we had to follow, we could literally talk to Dave until the end of the hour.
Oh, easily.
So when we come back, I have a clip from that Nancy Pelosi interview he referenced. I'd like to play here on Hardline on News Radio 930 W.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Ian. I didn't realize it was a life cut when I went to it. As this bump. Welcome back. It's Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN, the final stretch. And Brenda, we have some power updates.
Yes, we do. And keep them coming, folks. Lake Forest Parkway in Lancaster just got power. And I know that area was hit really heavily overnight and this morning. And also another texter reports Wright's Corner north of Lockport. Texter says, we had mighty winds really early. Calm down now with a light coating of snow on ground. All else is well. So, Joe, it sounds like things are starting to come together. Obviously, still be aware of any downed power lines. Don't touch anything. Watch out for those tree limbs and tree trunks that might be lifting up under the ground because of the unusually warm weather we've had. It can create a real issue for the trees and the area around the trees. So be aware of that as well.
Yeah, be careful and keep this all in mind when we have what could be another wind event toward the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm hearing Thursday, right, Joe? Is that what you heard as well?
Yes, we obviously will keep our eyes and ears on that. Now, we had Dave Leventhal on just the other segment. He referenced Nancy Pelosi on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. There were two clips I wanted to play that he referenced, and we could maybe talk about them. Here's a first one. George Stephanopoulos was asking Nancy Pelosi why Congress didn't wait for the courts to make a ruling. Here is the question and response to that. Again, this is Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, on with George Stephanopoulos earlier this morning.
You made the point that the president has blocked the witnesses, and that's true, but some of your critics have said that the House could have done a lot more to exhaust the alternatives, to go through the entire process in the courts and get to see if they would rule on witnesses. One of those critics is a very important figure in the Senate, Senator Susan Collins. Here's what she said.
The House chose not to go to court to enforce its subpoenas. So there are gaps in what the House has sent us. I don't understand the House's decision on that.
So that isn't even true. We are in court on the witnesses. It could take a very long time.
You pulled back the subpoena on John Bolton.
Well, but on the other witnesses, we have been in court, and we haven't eliminated the possibility of ever subpoena and going forward with Bolton. But he has said in this two-week period, that was another piece of progress that we made, that he would respond to a subpoena from the United States Senate. But the fact is that the President of the United States, again, quite different from President Clinton. President Clinton allowed the witnesses to come forward. President Trump has prevented that from happening.
Why not wait for the courts to rule?
Well, because it'll be how long do the courts take? We have confidence in our case that it is impeachable, and this president is impeached for life, regardless of any gamesmanship on the part of Mitch McConnell. However, that could still come to bear. But we're confident in the impeachment, and we think that it is enough testimony to remove him from office. However, we want the American people to see the truth. And why are they afraid of the truth?
So for someone that is really confident in her case, that sounded like one of the least confident answers to George Stephanopoulos' question.
You know, Joe, I don't think Nancy Pelosi ever sounds that confident. She speaks very haltingly and never sounds like she has the courage of her convictions. It really puzzles me how she got to this point in her career when there are so many other people that I find more impressive or more well-spoken, at least. Now, obviously, the woman is bright and has, you know, ascended the ladder, but she doesn't strike me as somebody who inspires a lot of confidence. I don't understand how she made it this far, but I've wondered that for a long time, and it's not even a political thing. It's just the way she presents herself doesn't strike me as somebody who's confident or one who inspires confidence. And nope. I'm not saying this to be partisan one way or the other. It's just my impression of her as a public figure.
Yeah, and she said they had confidence in the case, and so why not wait for the courts to make their ruling? And then if you really want the American people to have confidence like you do, why don't you wait for that? And then maybe Senate would remove the president. Again, to me, and I try to look at this nonpartisan, but I think if anyone's honest with themselves, it's difficult to do. But I try to view this as a nonpartisan. It seems like this was rushed through the Senate or through the Congress. I'm sorry. And now they want the Senate to do their job. They want the Senate to drag this out. When they had a time limit. They wanted to get this impeachment done before Christmas, and they did. Now they want Senate to do what they failed to do.
Right, and I don't think that she will determine, Nancy Pelosi will never determine if McConnell is going to run a fair trial, because that absolutely will break along partisan lines. So I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm not impressed with this whole process. It does feel like they're pushing it through, and I don't think anything will change.
No. And let's be honest, in D.C. right now, what you have are two parties looking at it from their party's point of view. They won't jump out their party. Yeah. And you even heard Susan Collins there, who is one of the, you don't know which way she'll go. She's been calling for a full trial, but she was even calling out Congress.
Right. And Pelosi, you could tell, did not appreciate that. So
you should see the visuals when they were playing that clip.
Oh, I would love to see that. I'll be sure to check it out. I don't know. We'll see what happens this week. But it should be a big week, Joe, especially with the on a local level, certainly with national political implications. But starting right here in Western New York, what will happen to Chris Collins? And then later, his son will be sentenced as well. It'll be interesting to see if he escapes prison time or if he too will serve prison time, just like his father.
And you know, we should be getting to a deadline where the Republicans are going to decide who they're putting up for that special election. I can't imagine that's too far away.
No, because the election will be in April, and here we are already in mid, you know, January almost. So it does go by fast.
Obviously, once that candidate is announced, Brenda and I will have not only that candidate in, we'll have Nate McMurray back in. Maybe we can have both candidates in at the same time, Brenda.
That would be good.
That would be awesome.
That would be entertaining, I think.
So that is something to look forward to. I mean, we are less than a month from the Iowa caucuses, and then once that starts, it is just a domino effect. Everything is in full swing, and like Brenda said, the primary's here in April, Super Tuesday in March, so there will be a lot to discuss on Hardline in 2020.
And we always appreciate your calls and texts. In fact, a text just came in about what Joe and I are talking about. Abuse of power is not a crime, says the texter. There is no law or statute that lists abuse of power as a crime.
Nancy Pelosi also, Speaker of the House, I'm sorry, Speaker Pelosi, also talked about Congress' reaction to Iran. And here's what she had to say about that.
Move on to Iran right now. Several of your colleagues have taken issues with the administration's justification for taking out General Soleimani. Mm-hmm. They said it was designed to stop an imminent attack. And President Trump has said that Soleimani was planning attacks on four U.S. embassies. I know you can't talk specifically about intelligence you've received, but do you think the administration has been straight with the American people about the reasons for taking out General Soleimani?
I don't think the administration has been straight with the Congress of the United States. When I was informed with the confirmation that the United States had taken out Soleimani, who is a terrible person, let's not be confused, and the motivations of Iran are bad, so there's no question about that. And again, with my intelligence background, I'm fully aware of the danger of Soleimani. However, what we want to do is not escalate a war. When they called and told me, the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs confirmed that we were involved in this action, I said, well, you should have informed the Gang of Eight in advance of this leadership and the chairs of the Intelligence Committee and ranking members, House and Senate. We had to keep it close. You had to keep it close. Well, we had to keep it close because we didn't want it to get out. What you're saying is you don't trust the Congress of the United States with sources and methods and timing.
I think that's fair. I really do. In 2020, as divided as Washington is, I don't think Republicans can trust Democrats, and Democrats can't trust Republicans because they're all trying to get one up on the other party, which I think, at the end of the day, we're the losers as American citizens.
I feel the same way, Joe. There's just way too much of this, you know, everybody entrenched, digging their heels in. McConnell and Pelosi clearly are powerful people in Washington. And I think this whole impeachment situation just emphasizes how much power the two of them have. And in the end, it's just, you know, a fencing match. And I think in the end, our way of life is not threatened to the sense that our day-to-day life is threatened. But this kind of thing cannot be good for the American way of life when there's so much division all the time.
For sure, for sure. Hey, one segment to go here on Hardline. Just a note for the on-demand. The first hour was time-sensitive. It was weather-breaking news. So on the website, you'll only see Hardline hour number two on-demand, because hour number one, once we post it, would be old news. So just letting you know if you're looking for the on-demand later today. When we come back, we will wrap things up here on Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome back. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. The final stretch here on Sunday, January 12th. Looks like people are slowly getting their power back. Actually, I think a lot quicker than most had expected. So Sunday afternoon should be in the lights with some playoff football.
I can't wait, Joe, even though it's still breaks my heart from the Bills loss. I still haven't gotten over that, and I hate to even admit that. It's really bugging me.
You know, At first I did hate to admit it, but now it's like it seems most of Western New York is in the same boat as I am. And I think it's because the way they lost. If they had gone in there and gotten blown out, okay. But we had all been planning already, what are we doing this weekend for the game?
And I felt that, right. And I felt that way all the way through the third quarter. And then you could just feel the wheels come off, this colossal collapse. It really stings.
We'd be a win away from hosting the AFC Championship.
Imagine that. So on to the more bigger issue at hand when it comes to the weather. We got a note from the DPW commissioner for the city of Buffalo. Ralph Wilson Centennial Park and Erie Basin Marina remain closed at this time as crews continue to inspect and clean up debris from the high winds and rising waters overnight. Approximately 2,400 customers are still without power in the city. About 20 trees were affected during the storm, some whole trees, other branches or limbs, and about a dozen traffic signals affected are either completely out or flashing. Crews are responding to the parks, trees, and traffic signals at this time. So thank you very much from the City of Buffalo officials for texting that information in. Feel free to let us know what's happening in your area as well. I know a lot of people are telling us that the power is back on in some of the heavily affected areas like Elma and parts of Clarence as well. Joe, have you heard anything new on that?
I have not. It seems Elma is back. I would like to know what's going on with my grill cover, but I think
if anybody sees it flying around OP, let them know.
If you see a Virginia Tech grill cover in Orchard Park, if it's past Orchard Park, I'd be really impressed. But if you see a Virginia Tech grill cover, I did the Brenda. Here's the thing. You know, I'll admit I've been lazy. My summer patio furniture is still on the patio, but I think I used it to my advantage last night and put the grill up against the table and tightened the
good
cover.
Thinking.
So I think my laziness might actually save my grill cover.
It actually paid off for you in this case.
I think so.
Good to know.
I find in life that happens a lot.
Yes. By the way, power has been restored at the Buffalo Airport. Upcoming flights are delayed and canceled, so be sure to check with your airline carrier. And the locales most affected by the NYSEC power outages, as we mentioned, Lancaster, Depew, Clarence, Elma, and Alden. So stick with WBEN throughout the afternoon, and we'll keep you posted. By the way, I did just read recently, Joe, that an Iranian Olympic medalist, female, has defected to the Netherlands, and she talked about how difficult it is as a female to live in an oppressive society under the oppressive regime in Iran. So she has defected to the Netherlands.
Interesting to see as the Olympics right around the corner. We are in an Olympic year, which means I get to play the Olympic theme song this year.
Olympic year, an election year. There's a whole lot going on in 2020.
2020 is a busy year. And as we mentioned, Brenda, in Western New York, we have a special election on top of everything.
Yes. So that'll be to fill the seat left vacant by the resignation in disgrace of Chris Collins in NY27, a big, big region that has a lot of folks vying for that particular seat in Congress.
Now, Brenda, we lost two prominent businessmen on Friday that their legacy will definitely be left here in Western New York. You spent some time with Mark Croce.
I did. As you may know, I host another show here at Entercom Radio called Slice of Life, and it's more of a lifestyle show. It's a couple of interviews that I do within a half hour, airs Saturdays from 9 to 9:30. And I had Mark Croce on that show, and he talked glowingly about the success in Buffalo. The jumpstart that he gave it with the Statler Towers. We talked about the Buffalo Chop House, Darcy McGee's. And at that time, the Curtis was just really starting to come alive and come to the popularity that it enjoys now. It started to become aware of that. So it's a big loss, certainly, for the Buffalo community to see Mark Croce die so tragically, along with his friend and fellow businessman, Michael Capriato, who was quite a force in the village of Orchard Park. Very sorry to see these gentlemen die in that way. And it'll be interesting now to see what the legacy is from a business standpoint. If those many, many commercial entities that Croce owned and Capriato, if they'll be able to carry on and in what manner.
I think when you look at Mark Croce, he definitely and I said this on Friday, took chances downtown before downtown really started the comeback that we see now. I mean, you could say he was one of the people who really kicked it off.
Fair to say that the Statler was the catalyst that I think really helped kickstart that whole development. on Delaware Avenue, that whole business corridor around City Hall. And he owned a lot of properties on Franklin Street as well, and invested early when people just didn't see that. He really was a visionary in that respect. So sorry to see such a big mover and shaker pass away. And the city, I think, will feel the effects of that. It'll be interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah, and definitely thoughts and prayers with his family as well as Michael Capriotto's family.
Absolutely. Condolences to the family. It's heartbreaking to see. When Croce was here at Entercom, Joe, just over a month ago, I chatted with him out in the reception area. He was here with his young son. His kids are young, 7 and 10 is my understanding. So it's heartbreaking to see a dad die, especially when the kids are so young.
Yeah, so definitely we'll keep them in our thoughts, and we hope everyone has a great week. Brenda and I will be back next week on Hardline, and in 2020, I'm guessing there will be nothing short to talk about. Definitely the Chris Collins sentencing will be a topic of discussion, and if I predicted far past that, Brenda, I think I'd be an idiot, because you never know what's going to happen in politics 7 days from now.
You know, day to day, Joe, and I think it's fair to say from minute to minute, we're not sure what's happening. So keep it locked here on WBEN, and we'll keep you apprised. Thanks, everybody, for your text, calls, and for tuning in today.
Yes, have a great day. We'll see you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.